thenewspress.com.
Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of Money Talk. I'm Neil Kreisel, and Diane Duva and I are your hosts every week right here on AM 1290, repeated at 11, and on Saturdays at 6. We're brought to you by Cornerstone Home Lending, whose highly trained and experienced team takes great pride in helping people with home financing, offering competitive rates and a wide array of loan programs. Arnaldi's Cafe, one of Santa Barbara's oldest and most intimate restaurants since 1937, located on the corner of Olive and Cota Street in downtown Santa Barbara. And Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm in Santa Barbara, providing its clients with the personal care and attention of a small independent firm, coupled with the vast resources of a major financial institution.
And although no one can see us because this is radio, I feel the need to share that Neil today is in a full suit.
Yes.
With a tie and all. I thought it might have been for Halloween, dressing up as a insurance agent.
Yes. Well, the other part of it was that I've noticed when the paparazzi is at the entrance when we leave, I felt it was only appropriate.
you wanted to put your best foot forward.
That's right. And, you know, we have a guest today who is probably going to attract a lot of paparazzi.
That is true. We have with us Eric Friedman, a dear friend of mine and a candidate for the 5th District of City Council. Welcome, Eric.
Great. Thank you for having me on the show today.
So articles. So things in the news. There's a lot of things in the news, but we're unfortunately restricted just to things that involve your money. Too bad, because there's even more interesting stuff that doesn't involve your money.
It was hard to find some good articles this week with all that's going on.
Right. But the first article is called, entitled, Lessons and Warnings from the Crash of 1929.
And if someone can call in right now and guess who the author of this article is,
yes,
there'll be a Halloween prize
for you. Well, I'll say that. Jason Swig is a columnist for the Wall Street Journal, and he only writes once a week in the Saturday-Sunday edition, and it's called The Intelligent Investor. And his sensitivity is very similar to this show's. He talks about things that are both interesting and are both relevant to individual investors. And in this particular article, he talks about an investor, academic/investor, who in writing predicted the stock market crash of October 1929. And he was very explicit and got an incredible amount of credit because he was one of the few voices that was correct. But now here's the interesting part. 5 years later, he wrote, named Carl Karsten, wrote a book denouncing his own work. And he said basically he was just lucky. It was wrong what he said, because he was basing his analysis on historical data, and he said historical data doesn't work. And what he said was, I'm going to look for a new way of predicting the market. And we had on our show about 6 months ago the person that developed Smart Beta. That was about, I guess he invented Smart Beta, he said, about 4 or 5 years ago.
He did a white paper. Rob Arnott, who is an academic, or started as an academic, wrote a white paper on Smart Beta and indexed, or rather factor model indexing.
Well, this man, Mr. Karsten, did it in 1932. And not only did he do it in 1932, he also said that the best way to invest is to both buy stocks and sell stocks short. And so in a sense, he was one of the first hedge funds by basically creating, he didn't call it a hedge fund, he called it a hedge principle. And he said, the way to make money is to buy the three biggest stocks in an industry whose shares rose the most and sell those from the industry that's doing the worst. And sort of like maybe he was the first momentum investor. But then he said at the end of his career, he said, you know what, any system that is based upon historical data is probably doomed to fail. And There was this book, which I mentioned once before, called Black Swan, that came out about 8 years ago, and it was written by a statistician, quote, mathematical genius, quote, bond trader, who believes that historical data in a stock market setting has absolutely no bearing, and that, you know, randomness is essentially what you look at when you look at historical data. And all these attempts to make something out of it is just basically giving you excess confidence. So,
well, I think one of the things that Carlson, that article points out, that Carlson actually talked about, was if everybody's doing it, it no longer has an edge. So it runs true to what we normally talk about in terms of, you know, passive investing, you know, how ETFs are at an all-time high of people, you know, have stopped really trying to beat the market through active trading.
I'm glad you brought that up, because that actually was one of the reasons I picked the article, because the reality is that hedge funds did very, very well 20 years ago. But as more and more hedge funds came into the marketplace, and there was a proliferation of hedge funds, so much so that everyone who was a money manager became a hedge fund, the opportunities to benefit from arbitrages and various strategies were reduced to essentially minor little ticks. And so the hedge fund business has really been suffering from the fact that their success basically brought on an avalanche of players that basically took away all the benefits.
Right. And in hedge fund investing, the cost to get in is quite hefty. You usually pay a 2% fee plus a 20% of your upside. Mm. That unless they're delivering superior results that far outweigh traditional ways of investing, it really isn't worth the cost to get in.
So the next two, we have two more articles, and both of them have distinguishing features. The first one I'm going to talk about is, I think, important because it's the longest article I've ever seen in the Wall Street Journal. It's 3 pages long. Now, I have to confess, I got bored. I didn't read all of it, but I think I got the essence of it. And basically what this article says is that Morningstar, which is the capital T-H-E, mutual fund ranking system, where most people who are buying mutual funds tend to look at the number of stars a mutual fund has and buy that particular fund versus another one.
Well, and Morningstar is the most widely used, even within industry professionals.
And what they found, they did this massive study and resulted in a massively big article, that it doesn't work. That is, the funds that were rated the highest were rated the highest because they did in the past very well, and typical of successful investors, they tend not to do so well in the next period. And in fact, one of the interesting statistics that I love about the stock market is the average stock market investor has done worse than the average mutual fund.
Well, now, over the last 20 years, the average investor, defined by Dalbar, which is a study that studies how investors are doing, how they make decisions, did 2.3%. Barely beat inflation. And if you had invested in anything else, whether it be REITs, which was the best, to a 40% stock, 60% bond allocation, anything else did better than the average investor. And part of it is because you have market timing. We're just on the heels of the 87 Black Monday, that the market was down 34%. Now, if you had sold out in 87 during Black Monday, you would have missed out on all the return, because in 87 the market actually closed up 2%. You would have locked in that loss and you would have never gotten it back. And so that is why the average investor tends to do not as well as just any other investment.
And what makes it even worse is that in order to use the star rating, you have to pay Morningstar. And they give an example of a fund that had $100 million in assets. They pay $10,000 to Morningstar for the right to use the stars in their advertising. This is Hodges Capital. And by 2 years later, their fund had risen to $1.6 billion. And its performance subsequent to that was disappointing. So there is certainly less value than one would expect. And the final article I have, I just thought it was really interesting. It is about MasterCard trying to...
Really, it's about innovation.
It's about innovation. It's about the Internet of Things. exactly right. It's about their attempt to become part of the Internet of Things. And what they have done is they've created, and they're trying it out now in one store, a thing called a smart mirror. And it's for changing room, fitting rooms in department stores. And the mirror that you look at has within it, embedded in it, is buttons where you scan the outfit that you're putting on, and the people in the store know what you're trying on, and they will give you not only different sizes without you asking, but they'll also give you things that actually go with it. And so they found that when people try something on and it doesn't fit, and they put their old clothes back on, they're typically done shopping.
Well, because it's a depressing experience.
Right. But once they keep their clothes off and then someone brings stuff in, they're more likely to buy. And the last thing that is really interesting, and this is sort of scary from, you know, the consumer standpoint, it remembers everything. And so you will lose some privacy because they will know, that they, whoever they is, what you like, how big, what your size is, what you turned down, what you bought. And so ideally it's supposed to help you shop the next time, but it's also a way of keeping track.
And this article also brings up window shopping, you know, as if you're trying or if you're able to look in a mirror and see how, even if it's virtually, see how the shirt or blouse or pants fit you and you decide you want to buy it, you can actually buy it right on the window outside, which then makes retail space a 24/7 proposition as opposed to just when you have a person working in the store. Right. And in hopes that it might actually help the retail in America, you know, fight back against Amazon in some way.
Yeah, but neither Amazon or this shopping from your iPhone in a window is good for retail employees. You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
For prospective homebuyers, one of the most important steps of the loan process is getting clear and honest information from someone who will speak plainly and truthfully about loan programs and options.
I'm Kelly Marsh, Vice President, California, of Cornerstone Home Lending, where our highly skilled and experienced team takes great pride in helping clients obtain home financing with honest, knowledgeable, fast, friendly, and efficient service. As a Santa Barbara native who has spent the past 20 years in the mortgage industry and has closed over 4,000 loans, I'd appreciate the opportunity to earn your business and invite you to visit thekellymarshteam.com or call my office at 805-563-1100 to learn more about how Cornerstone Home Lending can help you determine the best way to manage mortgage debt to achieve a more stable financial future.
Licensed by the Department of Business Oversight under the California Residential Mortgage Lending Act. California Residential Mortgage Lending Act license number 41DB072220. California Financial Lending Law license number 60DB072528. Loan originator NMLS number 245822. Not a commitment to loan. Equal housing opportunity.
Star Jasmine Music serves over 3,600 people per year. By providing a safe, supportive environment to explore music, you'll find a place that resonates within. We teach songwriting and how to play a variety of instruments. We have a Pro Tools state-of-the-art recording facility and provide opportunities for teens and young adults who show passion for music and demonstrate talent to record their work. This experience has been known to better one's self-esteem and often leads to development of skills in business and self-management. We have special programs for at-risk youth, as well as the mentally and physically challenged. When ready after a 10-week series, we record our students and give them a CD to show the fruit of their efforts. This experience leads to self-confidence. Visit us at www.starjasminemusic.org. Star Jasmine Music. Sharing music exploration through teaching and recording.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Cornerstone Home Lending since 1988, a mortgage banker and direct lender that believes in providing in-depth loan consulting to its customers in a personalized and honest manner. And we can be reached at 564-1290.
Did I tell you, I know this is about our next sponsor, but did I tell you that we moved leagues from Monday night to Tuesday night, Arlington Financial Advisors?
Oh, I was going tonight.
No, don't come down tonight, tomorrow night, although I will not be there because I have kids that need to go trick-or-treating, you know, the important things.
What's tomorrow night? Is it Halloween?
Halloween. Halloween. We're going to come to your house, Neil.
Oh, good.
They want some big-sized candies.
Oh, good.
All right. Well, we're in studio today with Eric Friedman, who's a current candidate for the 5th District of City Council, and he's a hometown candidate, a local. So, Eric, welcome.
Good afternoon.
Thanks for being with us today. So tell us a little bit about yourself, because I think, you know, it's always unique to find somebody that is a local, I think, given that both Neil and I are transplants.
Yeah, so I moved here when I was 3 with my mom, and I lived in Santa Barbara through 6th grade, eventually with my stepdad, and attended Monta Vista Elementary School, which is in the 5th District, and I now have a 3rd and a 5th grader that are attending there, which is very cool to have them go to the same school. In fact, I was a parent chaperone today for the 5th grade trip to Arroyo Hondo, which was a lot of fun. After 6th grade, due to the housing affordability issue all the way back in the 80s, my parents moved to Lompoc and commuted. And now I've been back here in Santa Barbara for about 20 years now with my wife, Julie, and raising our 2 sons.
That's great. What a cool story. So do you tell your kids, hey, you know, daddy went to this school too? And
yeah, no, definitely. It's fun. And now they start to have some of the same classrooms. So that's where I was in 3rd grade. And that's where I was in 5th grade. So it's a lot of fun and to see how the school's changed, but how it's also remained very similar to when I was there.
That's neat. Definitely cool that you were able to have that come full circle. So tell us a little bit about what got you involved in wanting to run for city council.
Well, I wanted to run for council to bring a perspective of a younger two-income family, working family to the council, and also with kids. There hasn't been a council member in many years that have had kids in the elementary school system, 6th grade or under. So I wanted to have that perspective on the council. And I also worked for our Congressman, Salud Carbajal, back when he was a county supervisor for 14 years. So had that experience in government. And it's the same type of system that we've now transitioned to where you represent a district, but also the city as a whole. That's the system I worked under the county. So I have that experience, and then also volunteering with a number of nonprofits. You and I involved with the library. And then also went back and received a master's in public administration from Cal State Northridge a few years back, and have a degree in history from University of Notre Dame. So that's always been something that's public service and political things have always inspired me.
When you were at Notre Dame, did you play football?
I watched football. They're having a good year this year, so I was very happy on this last Saturday.
Yes, well, we were all up late last night watching the Dodgers. Oh, that was a tough game.
Heartbreak.
Yeah, heartbreak for sure. So now, given that you're looking to bring in a different perspective, which I'm thrilled about. You know, as you know, I have 2 small kids as well, and younger than yours. So, what do you see as the role of the city council in helping small businesses in Santa Barbara?
I think the council has a very major role in helping set a vision for the next 5, 10, 25 years, especially in terms of economic development. When we're looking at State Street and what's the future of State Street, we have to come up with a vision, and it's not just the council, but it's a community buy-in. Whether it's the Chamber of Commerce, whether it's the businesses, the community at large, all need to come together to really reinvent State Street and look at what's down there. One example is providing housing down there, so you have younger workers and you can also have seniors down there, and that will facilitate new types of businesses that are down there, local businesses that are experience oriented. And we also need to make sure that our processes, such as in the planning development department, community development, are working properly, and that business owners know when they go in for a permit what to expect. So make sure that everyone is getting fair and equal treatment and they have an adequate timeline of when they expect to get their projects through the planning process.
Right, because that is definitely one of the chief complaints of people trying to do business, whether it be a store remodel or whether it be your home remodel, is that there always seems to be a complaint that there's a bog up at City Hall. And so what real change do you think you could bring as a council member to that bureaucracy that has a negative effect on our citizens?
Well, I think one is having worked at the county for 14 years and understanding how those processes work, and having served on a 2 city commissions, in particular the Library Advisory Board for 10 years and then also the Harbor Commission. So I understand how the internal processes work, and having studied it, I understand the administrative sides. So you understand where everything kind of gets jammed together and how to work through that. So, and also having developed relationships with a lot of the city staff, especially city high-end administration, and knowing them and trying to work with them. And again, it comes down to the council setting the vision, because I think ultimately you have the vision and you go and implement it. And I think that's where we're lacking right now, is not having a vision of where we want to be. And that makes it easier for the city administrator and his staff to come in and work from the ground up, and the city departments to say, this is where we're going. These are the values that we want to implement, and this is how we get there.
But, you know, if you look at the dilemma of Lower State Street, it's not as if we're in this alone. This is true not only in this country, but pretty much in all Western cities. There is a real problem, and it's not just Amazon, although it's partly Amazon, where the old way of doing business is changing. And, you know, one of the things that may be too optimistic is what you said is we all have to have a vision. Well, how do you get that vision without calling in the best minds from people, not just in Santa Barbara, but who've actually done it, who's actually come up with solutions? Because these are problems that are, you know, we look at sometimes where we live and say, we're different. We're not different. We're suffering from some of the same major changes in the economy that everyone is experiencing. So what's your view of looking at other places as a way of, you know, modeling what could be solutions for us as well?
No, it's a great point. I actually agree with that 100%, that we need to look at what other jurisdictions have done. About 10 years or so, when we were developing the 10-year plan to end chronic homelessness, and one of the terms that came up was legitimate larceny, where you go and you steal what other communities are doing and you modify it to your own. So you're exactly correct. San Luis has a lot of examples we can look at down in Santa Monica, but you also look at cities in Colorado and Florida that have these same types of issues. They're coastal cities with good climates. The shift to online retail is affecting them. So I think looking at those examples and then modifying it to what works here in Santa Barbara and getting our great minds, because one of the things I want to bring to the table when I'm on the council is to have our community members have more of a voice, because I think we have so much expertise and a lot of talent here, not in the private sector, but also retirees that could come to the table and help us with that vision.
Yeah, because sometimes, and I've only been here 19 years, and yet I hear sometimes politicians talk about, you know, we know what's good for Santa Barbara. It's a different place. And it is a different place, but it's not the only place like this. And sometimes you really have to look at empirical evidence of successes someplace else.
Well, I think it would also help when you have those task force or community building, if you had some sort of framework. So like this worked in San Luis Obispo as an example. What do you think about it and how can we adapt it here, instead of kind of a free for all that sometimes I feel like our community town halls, where we're all supposed to go and give our opinion, turn into we're supposed to be on homelessness. And then we end up talking about, you know, who knows what, trash on the street, right? Yeah. So that would also be helpful, which I think is great. And so given, you know, where a big focus has been is on State Street, what ideas do you have that you think that the city council, what vision would you see for State Street and how we can kind of rekindle its quaint feeling that we all have grown to love?
Well, I think one of the first things is look at the issue of converting and repurposing some of the existing buildings, such as the old Macy's, into housing and mixed use. Getting a vibrant community that lives down there, that's down there 24/7. Because if you have people living in a neighborhood, you're going to have their people there more hours. You're going to have different types of businesses that will be able to thrive, because they're going to serve different niches that you need to have, such as smaller markets. You might have farmers markets down there more often, those types of things. And then I think we also need to look at just State Street in general. There's discussions about, do we close off parts of it or not? And there's other communities that have done that. They've closed off their downtowns. So I think all these deserve to be part of the discussion and be on the table. But I think housing is going to be the key driver of what the vision in the future of State Street will be, if we allow it or we don't.
You're listening to Money Talk on the Santa Barbara News Press Radio Station. We'll be right back.
It's a fact. Successful wealth management is built on strategies that focus on the big picture, take a long-term view, and establish deep and valued relationships. Hello, I'm Diane Duva, founding partner at Arlington Financial Advisors, Santa Barbara's trusted family guide, empowering you to make more informed and confident decisions. At Arlington Financial Advisors, we bring order and balance to your financial life by monitoring and managing risk so you can focus on your work, family, and enjoying the moment. We are a fully independent firm offering strategic financial planning, estate and tax planning, and private money management.
Our plans and portfolios are handcrafted using a rigorous and disciplined approach, supported by a consistent yet highly personalized client experience. Our clients look to Arlington Financial Advisors as a home away from home, a comfortable place to protect what they've accomplished while they prepare for what comes next. Please visit arlingtonfinancialadvisors.com or call me, Diane Duva, at 805-699-7300.
Hey, America, we need to have a little talk. I don't know if you've noticed, but we got a lot of food in this country. A lot of peaches, a lot of corn, a lot of apples, a lot of everything. We've got so much food that we can't even eat it all. So if we got all this extra food, how are 17 million kids in America struggling with hunger? I just don't get it. That's why the Feeding America nationwide network of food banks gathers surplus food and gets it to the hungry kids who need it. They can get you food even if you live in Idaho or Alaska or somewhere crazy like that. This isn't complicated. We got extra food and we've got hungry kids. Feeding America's done the math. Now it's your turn. Support Feeding America in your local food bank at feedingamerica.org. I know you got internet on your phone, so what are you waiting for? We can't do it without your help. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm founded on providing thoughtful, objective, and comprehensive financial guidance for families and entities who are seeking long-term financial confidence.
And if you're just joining us, we have in studio with us Eric Friedman, who's a current candidate for the 5th District of City Council, and he is a local guy who's been here his whole life, and currently he's working at Trader Joe's on De La Vina, so you can go see him there if you want to talk to him about anything after the show. So, you know, on the break, we were talking about different incentives that City Council could have for the real estate owners on State Street or on, you know, State Street, because it's the issue that we're facing as a community right now, where you could provide tax incentives if it's rented, and tax, you know, basically an extra tax if you have your vacant building. Now, do you think that that's a policy that is within the purview of the City Council?
Well, I think what we would need to do is look and see if other communities have done that and see what their results are. I think it's something to look at, but again, we need to kind of look at if it's been done before and what the results are, and then also make sure that we're working with the property owners and the business community as we go forward in that approach on that, because it's that important to have them early up front in those discussions.
Right. And, you know, I know that there's one vacant spot that has basically been scraped down to the studs and has been rebuilt, and the owner decided not to put a second story that would have doubled the square footage. So now it's just that one big, long kind of bowling alley building that's for rent, and it's not built out yet because it's brand new construction at this point. You know, I just feel like it will be harder to rent that space given the local retail climate that we have, that we're facing on State Street. So in addition, State Street, you oftentimes, when you talk to owners of businesses on State Street, they always like to bring up the homeless issue. Where do you feel that City Council or the city in general can help in that environment?
Well, I think we have a moral and an ethical obligation to address homelessness. I think there's two groups that everyone is talking about on the campaign trail and for years working on these when I worked at the county. The first are the mentally ill, and many times they have co-occurring alcohol and or drug disorders. And then there's the young, aggressive panhandlers, most often young, from out of the area. And so I think one is we need to have more outreach workers on State Street. In particular, the City Council has started to do that with the AmeriCorps program. I'm a big proponent of that, of having the same person make multiple contacts on a daily basis, especially for those who are mentally ill. And it has to be the same person to build that trust. You can't have different people going up to them. And on the State Street corridor, as well as at the library, since we have the new children's library there, and that's a missing component of downtown as well, is enhancing our library and providing those services to get our mentally ill into the services that they need. And the other part is with the aggressive panhandlers. I think there needs to be a campaign to limit giving out change on the street or dollars on the street from both tourists and locals alike, because that just perpetuates that. In addition, enhancing our community policing efforts, which police chief is doing. And that's been a great response. It's just having more beat cops down there and having more of a presence, I think, goes a long way towards enhancing the downtown.
Absolutely. And, you know, as somebody who, as you know, I live just a few blocks off State Street, that, you know, a lot of people like to talk about the problems of their businesses being down on State Street because tourism is down or locals aren't going because of the homelessness. And I often say it comes down to economics. You know, if people, I don't stop shopping on State Street because there are homeless people per se. You know, it doesn't affect what my routines are. So,
well, what about, you know, the other part of it, which you mentioned briefly before about housing, workplace housing. I'm not talking about affordable housing. Workplace housing is really an issue here, because if we're going to attract businesses, and I guess that's a question, do we want to attract businesses? You need to have places for people to afford to live, because the commute is really awful.
Well, what's interesting is I brought that up to a friend of mine who is good friends with the former housing authority head, and he was trying to put together a deal for workplace housing where the average income had to be between $80,000 and $120,000, and he got skewered, and it ended up not going through. And really, when I look at that, yes, there's affordable housing for people in this community who are making $50,000 and less. But really, if you're making $80,000 in this community, it's still very difficult to live and afford a place to live when you have rents at $3,000 to $4,000 for a 2 to 3 bedroom home. And so, I'm sorry,
The point is that if we want to attract businesses, and by the way, that's a question that, you know, people have to make a decision whether they want to attract businesses. And, you know, what I think is irrelevant. What do people in the community want to attract businesses? But if you do, you need to find a solution to the fact that no matter how successful they are at their business, they can't afford to live here. You're not going to be able to sustain a growing business. And, you know, and this ties into what I think is the real pressing issue for the new city council, is that if you believe some of the numbers that are floating around, there's a real crisis, a financial crisis coming. So even if you decided that this is a great place, let's leave everything alone, you know, without some solution to some of these economic problems, Santa Barbara can be in real trouble financially.
Yeah, no, we need to have diversify our economy here. I mean, tourism is, I think the study of it, $1.9 billion in the county, a large majority of it here. And the thing with the tourism is there's a lot of low-level service jobs, so they either can't afford to live here, so they're commuting. So we need to look at the types of industries we want here. We have such great talent coming out of UCSB, out of Westmont, out of City College, a lot of these tech entrepreneurs who are educated here. They want to stay here and they can't, so they go back to the Bay Area and they get the next billion-dollar company. For example, Lyft was started here. So we need to find a way to get our young entrepreneurs here, but also bring our seniors downtown also, because that would free up some of the housing stock here if they could retire and move downtown where they don't need a car, they're down by the services, they're down by the restaurants and shops, and some of that housing would open up, would alleviate some of that. And then the other part of it is just having the housing in the downtown area and repurposing it, I think, is a major, major focus of the next council.
It's interesting that you brought up the seniors. Last week we had Joe Parker, who is a real estate agent, talking about how the baby boomers haven't been turning over the inventory because they can't quite find the downsizing that next property because of the property tax increase if they were to move. And so that would very much free up some inventory for new and young families to be moving into.
And by the way, there is some great evidence. 25 years ago, Lower Manhattan had no residential, and somebody built one building down there, and it was like a ghost town after 5 o'clock, and I couldn't understand why people would move there. And over the next 15 years, almost all of the old office buildings became residential. And now there's a thriving, popular neighborhood with supermarkets and movie theaters. It's unbelievable. The downtown is not just a empty, dark place that it used to be when the stock market closed. It has become a very important, vibrant part of Manhattan. So, you know, this is not, you know, a rocket science tree. If you put housing in a place, build it and they will come. The commercial enterprises will come and people will come and give it vibrancy. You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
Are you ready to start and run your own successful business? Ready to grow your small business or home business? Women's Economic Ventures is a local nonprofit helping women start and build successful businesses. In addition to their highly successful self-employment training program, Weave offers services to help women succeed at every stage of their business, from startup and launch to building and sustaining a business, including individual business counseling, professional networking events, advanced business training, and small business loans to start or expand a business. Over 1,000 local businesses are now owned and operated by women who have taken part in programs and services. Whether you're ready to start up, launch, build, or sustain your business, Women's Economic Ventures is right here to help you make it happen. Call 965-6073 or visit weaveonline.org.
People been saying to your friend, get a different face, and posting on their feed, they're super ugly. The things they say to them online are cruel and they're not true. So tell your friend, I'll stand up for you. Don't worry, I know what to do. Oh, 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 oh. Tell the world I see.
Know someone who's being bullied online? Send the witness emoji. It looks like an eye in a speech bubble, and it's in the symbol section near the clocks in your phone. You'll let the world know it isn't cool, and you'll let your friend know you care. Learn more about the witness emoji at eyewitnessbullying.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Money Talk. Brought to you by Arnaldi's Cafe, one of Santa Barbara's oldest and most intimate restaurants since 1937, located on the corner of Olive and Cota Street in downtown Santa Barbara.
And we have Eric Friedman, the 5th District City Council candidate, who has been endorsed by both the Independent and the Chamber of Commerce, with us today. If you're just joining, welcome, Eric.
Thank you.
And so before the break, we were just talking about some issues that Santa Barbara faces, and What do you think about California's move to raise the minimum wage to $15 by 2023? Do you think it will be positive given how many kind of lower level hourly wage employees we have with our hotel and tourism industry?
Yeah, well, I do support the move by the state for a number of reasons, but one of the primary reasons is it makes it consistent throughout the state. It's difficult for businesses to have different wages in different areas, and there was slowly a push through different jurisdictions to raise that wage. We do need to work with businesses to make sure we're addressing their concerns with it. It is phased in over a number of years, which I think is positive. But at the end of the day, it's providing more money in working families' paychecks, which means that they'll go out, they'll spend more money, support local businesses, and they'll be out there spending it. The flip side of it is when you, if you don't have something where you're paying a living wage, is you have somebody like Walmart that comes in, and what they're able to do is pay poverty wages so people are still on public assistance. And in the case of Walmart, what happens is their employees go on public assistance, and then they come out, and because Walmart sells groceries, they get a discount, so they pay for their groceries with public assistance dollars. So Walmart's kind of double dipping, so it prevents those types of abuses. And it gets people, at the end of the day, just having wages where they can support their families and go out and enjoy the community more.
So, you know, interesting, both we worked, Eric and I, we worked together on the new children's library and that public-private partnership. What values that you learned from that experience do you want to take to City Council, and how do you see that working in the future?
Well, first, I want to give props to Diane. We both served on the library board at the same time, and she and I really pushed for that in the city's involvement. The quick backstory on that, and this is how the public-private partnerships, and this is a way that I think we need to address one of the many ways we need to address our infrastructure, in addition to Measure C, is that with the public-private partnerships, the city can invest a certain amount, and then there's community members here who will come to the plate and get those funding. So in this case, Diane and I, had gone to the city. We knew that there was over $1 million in the community that wanted to invest in the children's library. It's a terrific investment, but it was also seen as a city project as well. So we met with the city administrator and a couple council members at the time. This is about 4 years ago, and And we telegraphed it, and we said, you need to have this as part of your budget in the next year. So we were aware of the timelines. And the city came through and had that. And then we were able to raise $4.5 million to build a library and have an endowment that helps pay for a position on there. And so I think that's one way to look at our infrastructure needs is to look at specific projects that the community would support, such as a children's library and others. And that's why Measure C is so important on a number of issues, is because it gives us the flexibility to have these funds on an annual basis. And if there is something where we can get a public-private partnership, we can draw from those funds and have them available so that we can work with the community.
Could you explain a little bit more about Measure C for those of us who haven't read our ballots yet?
Yeah, so Measure C is a 1 cent sales tax. It would raise our sales tax from 7.75% to 8.75% and make us similar to many communities. We're actually one of the lower ones in the county right now. I do support Measure C. However, I would have preferred to have a 10-year sunset clause just to ensure the accountability on it, since it is a general fund tax. And should it pass, I am committed to using it only for infrastructure. That's what everyone's talking about, and that's what, as a council member, I would only use it for that. And the other part of it is that we also need to look at the baseline that we have currently that we put towards infrastructure, roads and others, and that becomes a new baseline so that the tax is in addition to whatever we currently allocate rather than replacing what we do.
But isn't it a regressive tax? I mean, any sales tax is a regressive tax. So you're really putting a burden on the people who can least afford it.
Yeah, that is the case. However, with Measure C, it's estimated about 40% of the tax would be paid by tourists who are visiting here. And the tourists do use our infrastructure. They use it heavily. They use our water infrastructure. Water is my number one issue. We can talk about it another time. I don't know if we have time today. But water, they use our roads, they use our police services, and all those things. So about 40% or so comes from people who are visiting the area.
So let's talk about water. You know, as we don't have that much time left of the show, what talk a little bit about, you know, is Santa Barbara going to be gold as the new green forever?
I think it's a new reality we have to look at with climate change and longer droughts. When specifically this next city council though has a real opportunity because the 25-year contract to manage Lake Kachuma between the county and the Bureau of Reclamation is up in 2 years. And we need to make sure we get that contract right. It didn't serve us well in this last drought. We're actually one of two counties, I believe, that are still in a drought. And so that's a real opportunity that only the next council is going to have. And we need to work with the county and we need to work with the other water districts to make sure that contract makes us accountable, makes us conserve when we should and use state water when we should, and to make sure that Lake Kachuma is a 7-year lake like it was intended to be. I still believe it is a 7-year lake, not a 4-year lake. We will have less water from it, so we do need to look at other alternatives such as groundwater recharge and look at our desal as a part of the portfolio, but also looking at rainwater capture and those types of things.
So with the desal plant, it only accounts for about 20% of our water use. Is that accurate?
Yeah, 20 to 30%, I think.
Is there any way to make that make up a bigger portion of the pie?
There could be, but the issue with desal, one, is it's an energy hog. It takes a lot of energy to make it run. And I think one of the things we need to look at is reclaiming water, such as when we treat our water right now, we currently pump a lot of it out to the oceans treated. If we're able to recapture that and actually recharge our groundwater reserves, I think that's another way to get fresh water. And then also looking at just rain events and capturing rainwater as it goes off. So we supplement that. And again, it goes back to Lake Kachuma because that's always going to be our largest, cheapest local supply of water.
You know, it's interesting. I was reading an article that in Germany, there are apartment buildings that what they do is they do reclaim in the basements of water, so of gray water, basically, and then have that retreated and used for landscaping or what have you. Do you ever see that being a part of America's way of life?
I see it being a part of Santa Barbara's way of life. I think there's another opportunity there in terms of being an environmental leader and getting Santa Barbara back on the forefront of environmental innovation, especially in regards to water, as the whole Western United States is going to be experiencing droughts. We have in the past and we'll continue experiencing them.
But I understood that gray water can't be pumped through the same pipes as clean water or drinking water. So you'd have to really do a lot of capital spending to actually make that a reality, wouldn't you?
Yeah, you would, and that's where it comes down to, how do you pay for these types of projects? But we need to look at them. The more diverse our water supply is, the healthier our economy, the healthier our lives will be here.
And so with infrastructure, let's go back to the Measure C. Does that Measure C give way to widening the freeway, as you know, Goleta City has brought on a lot of new housing. The freeway is becoming more and more backed up in Santa Barbara due to that three-lane to two-lane, you know, at Fairview, you know, at the Fairview when it goes to two lanes. Is any of that to go to freeway widening in any way, or is that all with outside of the purview of Santa Barbara City?
So Measure C is only within the city of Santa Barbara, so it's infrastructure. Primarily, we would look at roads. We'd look at our police station. We have a police station that it doesn't work. If we have an earthquake, it would go down. And our police officers deserve to have a 21st century police station. So that would be a major project. And in addition to, there's a Fire Station 7, I believe, is another one that needs to be upgraded. So we have a lot of capital building projects that would upgrade in addition to our roads. We have Measure A, which it goes towards the freeway widening. And in addition to the freeway widening, we also I do support widening the 101. We had 79% of the voters vote for it. It's the second time we voted for it. And I like to tell people, you know, the first time the voters entertained it, I have kids in Monta Vista now. I was in Monta Vista the first time we agreed to widen it. So
not saying you're old, but gosh.
Yeah. So you get it. I think we need to widen 101, but we also need to make sure we're investing in alternative transportation, because we're never going to build enough housing to get people to live here, and we need to make sure we can get as many cars off the roads from Ventura and Lompoc and Santa Maria that are coming in here. So it's alternative transportation and the 101 widening.
And what alternative transportation, you know, can we look at? Amtrak doesn't seem like a viable source northbound. Is it southbound, or are you talking about bus transportation? What are we talking about?
So here? Part of the measure A was the lane and the train. So we continue to do that, but our hands are kind of tied working with Union Pacific. But what we can do is look at buses, and we also look at autonomous cars coming in the next 10 years and what opportunities there are for those. But when you're on a bus coming up here, you have the opportunity to go on Wi-Fi, get business done. So if you have one bus, it takes off, you know, 20, 30 cars. One bus is the equivalent or even more. So busing is a huge part of it. And other means if we can.
At one point, there was some sort of boat coming up from Ventura. Is that still happening or no?
No, I think that was a pie in the sky, or maybe a pie in the sea, I guess.
So it never came to fruition.
You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back with our final segment.
For prospective homebuyers, one of the most important steps of the loan process is getting clear and honest information from someone who will speak plainly and truthfully about loan programs and options.
I'm Kelly Marsh, Vice President, California, of Cornerstone Home Lending, where our highly skilled and experienced team takes great pride in helping clients obtain home financing with honest, knowledgeable, fast, friendly, and efficient service. As a Santa Barbara native who has spent the past 20 years in the mortgage industry and has closed over 4,000 loans, I'd appreciate the opportunity to earn your business and invite you to visit thekellymarshteam.com or call my office at 805-563-1100 to learn more about how Cornerstone Home Lending can help you determine the best way to manage mortgage debt to achieve a more stable financial future.
Licensed by the Department of Business Oversight under the California Residential Mortgage Lending Act. California Residential Mortgage Lending Act license number 41DB072220. California Financial Lending Law license number 60DB072528. Loan originator NMLS number 245822. Not a commitment to loan. Equal housing opportunity.
If you have trouble handling your anger, get help. If someone you love is hurting or scaring you, get help. There is a full-service domestic violence agency in Santa Barbara County, which offers emergency shelter, counseling, transitional housing, anger management, and teen outreach programs. Its name is Domestic Violence Solutions for Santa Barbara County. Call their 24-hour helpline at 964-5245. Domestic Violence Solutions for Santa Barbara County. Putting an end to domestic violence.
Did you know that domestic violence sends more than 500 women and children to emergency shelters every year? There is a place where all family members affected by domestic violence can get help. Domestic Violence Solutions for Santa Barbara County, with four 24-hour phone lines to help. In Santa Barbara, call 964-5245. In Santa Maria, call 925-2160. In Lompoc, call 736-0965. And in Santa Ynez, call 686-4390.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm founded on providing thoughtful,
objective and comprehensive financial guidance for families and entities who are seeking long-term financial confidence.
And we have in studio Eric Friedman, who is the City Council 5th District candidate, and he's also a board member of Child Abuse Listening and Mediation and Fighting Back Santa Barbara Youth Mentor Task Force. And he was awarded a 2007 Youth Mentor of the Year Award. That's exciting. And so as a city council member, where do you see you can really give back to the community in terms of nonprofit work?
Well, I think the city does rely a lot, and government in general relies a lot on the nonprofit sector, especially in a lot of these social service issues. And just having been a former board member for CALM, and then also currently on the Fighting Back Youth Mentor Task Force, the library board, just having that those experiences, I see how those partnerships are so vital to how the city can get things done. And then just being able to volunteer and having that network that I built up. One of the most rewarding things I've done is been a youth mentor to three different youth over the last 12 years over on the east side, a pair of brothers and then an older one. And the oldest one was 10 years old when I started mentoring him. He's 23 now, and he's at City College. And here's a kid who almost didn't graduate high school, and he has plans to go to CSB. So I think just having those opportunities and being able to promote them and work the city, be able to work more with the nonprofit community and enhance what we do is a very positive thing.
And so, you know, the environment is something that's very important to you. If you go to your website, if people do want to find out more about you, what is your website, Eric?
It's www.friedmanforcouncil.com, and that's FriedmanForCouncil.com.
And so you can find out all about Eric's take on most of the issues that are important to all of us in the city of Santa Barbara at his website. But the environment is one in particular that it's a big one for you. And where do you see you making the biggest impact on the council there?
Well, I worked on environmental issues for Supervisor Carbajal Congressman Carbajal when he was our supervisor, in particular issues of climate change, but also local renewable energy. Unfortunately, the study that just came out for Community Choice Energy, which would allow us locally to purchase more renewable energy in our homes, came out on the higher side. But there are some issues with that. We're the only area in the state that has two different electrical providers, PG&E and Southern California Edison, just due to the nature of our county. So kind of looking at that again and what we might be able to do here in Santa Barbara to make community choice energy a viable option here. And then also looking at just what we can do in terms of enhancing our parks, going pesticide-free, those types of things, and making sure that, you know, our waters are clean, our oceans are clean. I owe my life to the life I have to the ocean. And my wife and I, Julie, met paddling outrigger canoes with Santa Barbara Outrigger back in 2001. And just being able to have access to clean beaches was a life changer for me. And I love taking my kids to the beach.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, you talked about renewable energy, and you can't help but to think about Puerto Rico and how the partnership with Elon Musk, he's basically powered the entire children's hospital on the island of Puerto Rico, despite the fact that the whole island doesn't have electricity yet on grid. And so that's pretty powerful stuff, and it definitely could go a long way in helping Santa Barbara, where although today isn't sunny, it's sunny here, you know, 359 days out of the year. It could save a lot.
And it's also, you mentioned how sunny it is, investing in our bicycle master plan, bicycle infrastructure. I ride my bike to work at Trader Joe's, and I love it. And I tell people I don't have to deal with the Trader Joe's parking lot, so it's another bonus. So, but it's great. We need to have alternative modes of transportation, especially for those who live in the city and able to commute to work on bikes. And it's such a wonderful experience. You get to know your neighborhoods better when you're not driving the car. So.
Absolutely. You get to notice more things going on.
Of course, if I took a bike here,
coming here would be no problem. Going home would be
I couldn't drive you here.
True.
Unless we got a bicycle built for two.
Yes, because we do carpool to the station.
Yeah. Bike pooling.
Would I be in the sidecar, Neil?
So Eric, with all the things that you have done, it's amazing that you have time to run for office. But thank you so much for all you do. Best of luck a week from Tuesday. Thank you for coming.
Thank you for having me here today.
You've been listening to Money Talk. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week.